it's not.
Love Talk seconds. Radio.
Wow, mine did. Perfect.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do in this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Thank you, bus people. Thank you.
Oh, that was quick.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
They are enthusiastic today. It's the Florida heat, probably, that has part of that enthusiasm, you know. And speaking of heat, there is not just heat in Florida, but there is heat all over the United States and all over the world. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, too. The heat hitting Europe is pretty nasty, pretty bad. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And that's and some other stuff. So, it is Thursday, June the 23rd, 2022. It is 7:02 p.m. If it is really that and you're listening, then we're live and you can message us and Mike will get the message to me. If you are not at that time and date, then you are not live, and you can message us, but we won't answer because we won't be there. So, simple as that. So, yeah. And we got a guest next week, Stephen Lane, who is an author, wrote a book called Dragon Vine. And I have the book. I've been reading it. And Stephen is really knowledgeable. He is a sommelier, so he does have knowledge there. But he really does incorporate into the book a lot of wine stuff, an awful lot of wine stuff, which is really interesting. So he will be on next week talking to us about his book and his history leading up to it and how he, well, being a sommelier and what he's, if he decided to be an author, if he's worked anywhere and all that, we'll find that out next week. So, tune next week for our guest. And we've got other guests in the works too, but you just get to listen to me this week. We apologize for last week's sound glitch and all that. I had to call in on landline because I think Blog Talk Radio is playing games with us. Or it could be my microphone. I played a little bit with my microphone this week through some instructions that Mike sent me, and it seems to be working today. I don't know if maybe it was the microphone, but it's happened before, so who knows? You know, it very possibly could be Blog Talk Radio, and it could be the microphone, although it happens one week and then it doesn't the next and stuff like that. When you start getting glitches back and forth, you tend to want to blame something other than a thing I use all the time throughout the week and never have a problem with until I hook up the Blog Talk Radio. So, here we go. It is, like I say, 6:23. And we've got, what coming up here? We've got the 4th of July coming up in a week from, well, we'll have a show next week, and then 4th of July will be after that. Where's my... I can't find my pad to see what other stuff is happening here. It's around here somewhere. Let's see if my microphone will reach over here. Yes, it does. Well, I don't know what happened to it. Oh, there it is. It was buried underneath papers and stuff here. Okay. All right.
Note coming off of Facebook from a listener, Charlie. Thank you for making me aware that we have an echo coming through the broadcast. So I just changed an audio setting, and we'll see if that fixed it. Should be okay now, but he said there was an echo. So
we'll try that, John.
And hopefully we'll get some feedback and say, yep, that did it, and then I'll know.
That's nice. We get stuff like that. Problems. That's good. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you.
I received a invitation to the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association wine competition, and I'm still getting stuff like this. I my name probably to the wineries out there for all this stuff. But instead of filing this, I decided I'd tell you some stuff about this. It says that they have a wine tasting, the 17th Annual Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association Wine Competition. It is scheduled for Saturday and Sunday, August 13th and 14th at the Marriott Tysons Corner in Tyson Corner, Virginia. And it says the ASWA, which Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, the ASWA is the largest U.S. wine competition focusing exclusively on East Coast wines. Cool. But it includes a whole bunch of stuff. They do wines. It says the purpose of this year's competition will be, as always, to judge the quality and marketability of vinifera, Native American, and hybrid grape varieties, including sweet wines grown and produced in the Atlantic Seaboard states. It says we also include ciders, mead, and fruit wines, which is pretty cool. I've seen this competition in the past, and you know, they've been doing it for 17 years, so I've seen it in the past, but it really is a pretty good competition. I get the results and stuff like that usually. But they have lots of categories that they always offer, and it's when they offer more categories, that means that you're going to get more winners, because if you have red wine category and white wine category and sparkling wine category, you've got three categories, and you've got three first place and second, third, and whatever. This has, and I didn't count it, but this has like 35, 40 categories here, ranging everywhere from sparkling, vinifera wine, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Gewurztraminer, Riesling, Meunier, all broken down. And then they've got interspecific blends, Chambord, Concord, Norton, Red Muscadine, Scuppernong. Just a little bit of everything. They got berry wine, strawberry, raspberry, elderberry, palm fruit wine, apple, pear, stone fruit wine, cherry, peach, plum, other fruit wine, melon, citrus, flavored mead, traditional mead. It's a amazing amount of categories here. Even, you know, sweet white vinifera, residual sugar above 4%. And they got a whole bunch of different categories for the residual sugar above 4% and fortified wines and port styled wines that ends it all up. So quite a competition. It is $60 per entry though. And the number of entries are not limited. So if you want to enter 20 categories and you got 20 wines, go for it. And they can do that. You just make a copy of the entry sheet and start filling them out. Reed Livery and Winery. In fact, we interviewed him and he came into the. I think I'm getting some echo myself now. No, I guess not. Yeah, wow, that was funny. I just heard an echo from me. But Reed's Livery and Winery was a guest on our program. He also stopped by and visited me at the winery. He makes like 45, 50 different wines. It's just amazing. He says, yeah, I have all these fruit trees and all these grapevines on the property, so I just make wine out of everything. And he does. He's got a whole bunch of them. I had a chance to taste some of them. They're very good. But that's just one example of the competitions that go on around the country. We've talked about competitions before and how they're set up and what all they do and all that stuff. And I just got that in. Got that in Monday, so it's a reasonably new letter to me. Okay, let's pull out the old calendar here and see what's coming up for the rest of this week and into next week and see. Let's see, April, May, June. Here we go, June. June the 23rd, National Pink Day today, midsummer. Is tomorrow, which is the middle of summer. The days are going to start getting shorter from that day on. And so start looking at a little bit darker every evening. National Onion Day is Monday. And let's see, they don't have food. This thing used to have food dates all through it, but they don't have that anymore. And so... that's going to, let's see what wine days we might have for the rest of the month here. 23rd, none. No wine days coming up. So this is still Idaho Wine Month and Ohio Wine Month and Iowa Wine Month. I don't know if I mentioned that at the beginning of the month or not. I very possibly could have skipped that and not remember. So that's... coming up this week, not a whole lot, but I'm sure that one is never at a loss for a reason to drink wine. So jump in there and enjoy wine in good health and moderation, as they say. All right, let's see what we got here today. Heat. Wherever you are, I'm sure you are feeling the effects of heat right now. It is all across the country here, all across the Midwest, hitting, well, temperatures up in Fargo, I heard, were up in the mid-90s this past week. Fargo, yeah, North Dakota. And through Minnesota and all up and down through the near west and the Midwest and the... all that area there is having some extreme heat with no rain or break in sight. And that's also in Europe. And I just found that out. Europe is having their heat wave too. It's going in Spain, in Italy, France, Germany, all that area there. It's just in all the little small countries and everything. I just mentioned those countries because they're grapevine countries. And I was curious what was the effects of the heat on the vines and all that. So I was doing some research. And not good overall. The Vitis vinifera is not real tolerant of high heat. They've have the same thing with real cold weather. The skins will tend to burst, and there goes your grape. So I started to look up what the different types of temperatures that would be too much, and usually above 100 degrees, and that is the cutoff point. They stop metabolizing at 100 degrees, and if they stop metabolizing and it gets really hot, they shrivel up and start becoming raisinated, and they lose all their moisture. And they can also, if the grapevines get too hot, they can also lose their leaves, which could potentially kill them. Because without the photosynthesis, you don't have a good plant. So that is a possible problem. Now, I think what we are getting so far in these areas are not real long periods of major heat. It is hot, but it's not major long-term heats up into the upper 90s and stuff like that, and low hundreds. Some areas may be experiencing that. So I haven't seen any, though. I have been trying to search for what I can, try to find out what's going on. Concord grape is, the juice and stuff is doing well. Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Riesling, Chardonnay all can withstand the heat a little bit more. But it, and, you know, I just, I'm reading here. I'm sorry for the delays. But once the temperature reaches around 95 degrees, the grapes start shutting down so that they can conserve water. And the grapes are the grapevine's baby. One thing to always remember, so the grapevine itself would do what it can to protect it, the grapes, because usually they have seeds in them and they use, you know, want to propagate itself, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get more babies, more grapevines. And so when the temperature hits 95 degrees or higher, the grapes start shutting down, and they do this to conserve water. And as long as they're conserving water, they can survive. But it stresses the grapes, and especially the quality of the grapes and the quality of the vine. So testing plants in the various degrees and the heat waves and all that and water deficiencies have been an ongoing study. There's been work in the vineyards to try to see how much leaf removal or extra shading might be needed to protect the grapes and the grapevines. And then also canopy control and cooling devices. There's mist that has been put in vineyards to try to keep the temperatures down on the grapevines. And this is being done throughout the world, actually. The temperature here is the temperature in a grapevine can really cause a major loss of production, obviously, and that's the areas that are doing it. So there's a constant thing. IFAS in Florida is even looking at temperature controls and stuff like that and seeing what they can do to try to keep the grapes from getting, grapevines from getting too hot. The Washington State and California and Oregon are going through heat waves that is unprecedented, especially in the Central Valleys of California and Oregon. And so they've tried different methods of saving the grapes and the vines. Misting, it seems to be the most common and the best because it keeps the grapevines a good 10 degrees cooler than the ambient temperature. So misting is being used, although if the infrastructure is not set up for misting, then it could be really expensive to get it all set up. But a lot of areas that are set up for frost damage and they coat their grapevines in ice, misting is just the next step right there. You just change the little plugs on the water systems and stuff like that, and you can mist. So the heat is really becoming a factor around the world simply because the heat is affecting the grapevines and it's not going away. It's hanging around. the excessive heat is really depends on the grape itself. Some grapes obviously are more sensitive than others, but overall it is affecting them anywhere from 95 to 100 degrees in that range there. It really starts affecting grapevines, and it's not good for it. Here's something that says 17 days and counting is the number of days over 100 degrees in California's Central Valley since July 1st. So 17 days. It's not unusual for midsummer, but when the temperatures exceed 107 degrees for 4 to 8 consecutive days, it starts affecting the grapes tremendously. And they said that the very high temperatures, more than 110 degrees, haven't been recorded in the area in the Central Valley in 25 years. And it could have a major impact on grapevines or any other crop that's growing in the Central Valley. Since we are all about wine, I talk about grapevines, but it affects everything and affects all the crops. And so it's affecting everything, and the coloring of the grapes, it will affect that. And so the darker purples of the red grapes, it could make them lighter. The white grapes will turn, can get sunburns, they're saying here. It's a possibility. So heat is a major factor, as bad as the winter bad weather that hits areas. They're naming heat waves now, too, here in the United States. I just heard that they have names, and they're naming them just like they name hurricanes and a lot of other events. It seems like they like naming that stuff. Weather people get bored, I guess, so they say that they're going to start doing that. Pink berry, let's see. The abnormal coloration of white grapes, often called pink berry, is related to the anthocyanins, and that is part of the grape that can be affected by the sun. It says pink berry is commonly observed in hot tropical areas such as India, Brazil, and Australia, but it's because of the heat moving north and the heat we're having this year. It's also affecting a lot of the grapes that we have. And the Thompson seedless and muscat are also being affected too. So your Thompson seedless, you know, look for your green grapes to maybe be a little pinkish color. I don't know if they would pass them and still put them on the shelf, but there is a possibility. So the heat is a problem. Let me get out of that. Since I've been seeing this heat, I want to talk about that for a little bit. Okay. Here's something I saw that it said, grape expectations thriving on the vine for growers in Florida. And that caught my eye because, hey, yeah, All About Wine is located in Florida. And it said that the commercial viticultural is maturing nicely in Florida. There are over 40 wineries in the state of Florida. I haven't checked the latest, but I have to trust them because this is dated today. Wow, this is, you know, one of the dateline. The growers are producing more than 1,500 acres of muscadine grape, which is a 74% increase in the last 10 years. But they say that the increasing market for Florida-grown grapes, Ali Sackhosh, the University of Florida IFAS assistant, is attempting to grow varietals bred by scientists at Florida A&M University, the University of Georgia, and the University of California, Davis, which they have been trying that for years. This article is like it's brand new, but they've been attempting that for years and years. I don't know if there's something new out there. He says, Florida's mild winter climate and early spring season offer unique opportunities for early season fresh market muscadine, which can be weeks ahead of Georgia and North Carolina's. There's a new breed of Muscat grape developed by University of Georgia that is bigger berry, more sustainability, and it ripens earlier. And so wineries are planting that around the state. They said that Pierce disease presents a problem for the muscadine. Now, that caught me off guard on this article. I don't know why it doesn't. You can grow muscadine, and it says that but Pierce disease affects the muscadine, and it doesn't. I don't know. But they are doing stuff to try to stop the glassy wing sharpshooter. And we have talked about this bug many shows in the past. Scientists at UC Riverside out in California have shot at eradicating the glassy wing sharpshooter, just as resistance to the insecticides have been growing. It says when the bug flies into the grapevines, it transmits the bacteria that creates or causes Pierce disease, and once infected, the grapevines die, and which could be a problem for the $58 billion industry in California. And it's only controlled by quarantines and sprays, and the sprays are getting less and less effective, so it's become a problem. But University of California at Riverside is starting to use CRISPR technology. And what CRISPR does, if you are not familiar with it, you go in, you pull out a gene, you replace one little part of that helix of the gene with something else and insert it back in, and it changes the gene. So CRISPR technology is used to control sharpshooters' eye color, for example. In one experiment, they turned the insect's eyes white. And another one, they turned them into a blood red color. And the promising thing for this is that the color of the eyes were permanent and were then passed on to the offspring of the modified parents. So it wasn't just like you have to do it to every generation. It continued on. So because of this, they can start making changes to the insects and throw them out. And, you know, three or more generations afterwards can still have this change in it. So you can have the change in the insects so that they are not resistant to diseases, or that they are not going to propagate, or any number of things you can do to these insects through CRISPR, or gene technology, or gene splicing. So this is a good thing if they can continue this stuff, and or even stop the bugs themselves from not getting Pierce disease, although they do damage by eating the stuff anyway, but not nearly as bad. It's just it's a Pierce disease, because grapevines die. There's nothing that can be done. Once a grapevine is affected by Pierce disease, it dies. So, but they have, back to the what I was talking about on the Florida muscadine grapes. Started trials to evaluate the performance of these Pierce disease tolerant grapevines. Muscadine's not affected by it. I don't see. Okay, here, they said they have a block of Chenin Blanc, and Chenin Blanc is a vinifera family, so that would be affected by Pierce disease. So that's what they're testing on it here. Okay, I couldn't figure out why they said Pierce disease, but they do have a block of Chenin Blanc. So, okay, good. But Florida is becoming more and more and more a grape state. Yay, but every state is. So what can we say? Before I forget, and it's sort of cool, I've been seeing it National Geographic and also in text and all sorts of stuff. But there is going to be an alignment of planets. And the best time to see them is going to be tomorrow morning, actually. This can be glimpsed by a vast majority of the world's population north of the equator. Southern hemisphere is not going to get this, but the northern hemisphere will. But go out early in the morning, about 5 o'clock, and look to the east. Actually, just even a little bit more like east northeast, just a little bit further than straight east, and just on the horizon you will see Mercury. And then a little bit higher than that, about 1 o'clock from Mercury, is Venus, which really shines pretty bright. Venus is a very bright planet for us. And then on over closer to the moon, and you will see a crescent moon. On the left of the crescent moon is Uranus. And then going further to the right, there is a little dot of Mars, and Mars tends to be a reddish color, which is cool. You can pick it out. And then continuing to the right, which you're almost directly southeast now, you will see a fairly bright Jupiter. And then even more to the right, Neptune, about the same distance from Jupiter as Mars is from Jupiter, you'll see Neptune. And then over in the, almost in the straight south sky, up even higher in the sky, is Saturn. So a very unusual alignment of planets that we can actually see. So you've got Mercury, Venus, Uranus, the moon, then you got Mars, Jupiter, Neptune, and Saturn, all lined up in one great view there. An unusual alignment. The best time is tomorrow morning at around 5 o'clock in the morning. Look toward the east and to the southeast of the south, and you'll see all these planets. I'm going to share that with you if you have not heard yet. It's sort of cool. And all of you who don't listen to me live, sorry, you missed it. Actually, it goes up to the 27th. You can still see them pretty well on the 27th. You'll probably lose Mercury on the bottom of it, but over the next 3 days, 4 days, you'll still be able to see the lineup. Okay. This is an interesting article. The Lees. You may have heard wine makers, wine shows, myself, talk about leaving the wine on the lees. As we're making champagne, probably the most common, but what happens when they leave on the lees, and what is the lees? Let's talk about that for a little bit here. Lees aging, and this is also known as sur lye, which is French for on lees, so we're going to say on lees instead of sur lye, is the process of letting the white and sparkling wines mature and age on top of the spent yeast and other particulate matter. All right, simple as that. When you have something, when you're fermenting your wine, you have the yeast in there, and the yeast causes it to ferment, which creates oxygen and sugars. It creates oxygen from the yeast eating up the sugars, and it changes and does its magic work, and you have wine and oxygen. And the byproduct of this is called lees, which is a milky appearance of the wine, but sort of a smooth consistency, and it falls down to the bottom of the tank or barrel or bottle, whatever you happen to be using. Too much lees could have a bad impact on the wine. Others, it's a good thing. All right. So the process is going to give you a nice rounded wine, a good mouthfeel, rounded, creamy flavors, yeasty bread-like notes. You may have had a wine that you get the taste of bread. That's the yeast, and that's from the lees. Okay, this is commonly associated with Burgundian winemaking, and it's used for Chardonnays and Muscadet. The probably best known is Champagne. Champagne is left on the lees for anywhere from 12 months to 36 months, depending on your vintage and your type and all that you're making. And the style is being used in the United States a lot for California Chardonnay. And this is what helps contribute to the warm, buttery, creamy qualities of Chardonnays. You have, you know, along with the barrel and other factors in there, but the second fermentation, the malolactic fermentation, helps create that creaminess, and that's with all that together, you get this real butteriness on your Chardonnays. You have to have good grapes, obviously, and you have to have good leaves, and it creates a wonderful Chardonnay. Kara Morrison, who is the winemaker at Sonoma Cutter in California, says that using the lees on the Chardonnay creates a very buttery, silky taste to their Chardonnays. They also have the tradition that is used in Burgundy, the Surly aging techniques, including barrel fermentation, Surly, and Batonnage. Batonnage is the act of taking a baton, and stirring up the wine and the lees. And it creates, it throws everything all together and all that. The yeast has consumed and converted the sugar in a wine, and then it dies. Okay, once the sugar has been converted by the yeast had nothing else to work on, and so the yeast died. I lost my place. Okay. Inside these dead yeast cells, though, there's a whole bunch of important compounds. There's proteins and molecules. The molecules include mannoprotein and polysaccharides and fatty acids and amino acids. And these all help contribute to the taste of the wine. Mannoproteins add to the mouthfeel, the aroma, the flavor, and it also softens your tannins. Your polysaccharides are bonded groups of sugar molecules, and they help reduce the astringency, the bite you get, and they also create balance and structure in the wine. So when you hear, oh, this has good structure, that's what this molecule is for, the polysaccharides. Fatty acids are contained within the walls of the yeast, and they help boost the different flavors and the aromas, and the amino acids also do about the same thing, helping with the texture also. So all these things inside the yeast help contribute as you leave them on contact with the juice that you have. Interaction between the lees and the barrel is also essential. So the barrel comes into play on this. It takes compounds from the oak and immigrates it into the wine. This is one of the things, leaving the lees in there, it helps transfer some of the oak into the wine. Different lees molecules come into play at different points of the aging process. So usually the first few months, the early stages, the main benefit of Lees is to stop unwanted oxidation from developing in the wine. You've had a wine that's been oxidized. It turns brown around the edges and stuff like that. Red or white, it turns brown. Bad thing. But as long as it's left on the lees, it tends to stop that, retard that very, very quickly. The mannoproteins absorb the residual oxygen, and it stops the oxidation and the dull coloring and flavor. Mannoproteins are also critical for white wines that go through the malolactic fermentation. This is where the malic acid in a wine converts to lactic acid and creates that buttery, creamy, smooth taste that you get. And the malolactic bacteria eat the mannoproteins, aiding in that process. So the mannoproteins are a good thing there to feed that malic acid. Malolactic acid and the bacteria, and therefore converts that over to that butteriness for you. So the lees help on that. Okay, after the first few months, the dead yeast cells break down and start to release their compounds into the wine. Now, this is when the lees, winemaker can start to use the lees to shape the character of the wine. This is typically done through the batonnage, where a metal baton is inserted into a barrel of wine and stirred, releasing a cloud of lees. It's described here by Morrison as like cream and coffee or a lava lamp. It just stirs it all up and creates this, you know, different color and flavor. By stirring the lees, instead of simply letting them sit on the bottom of the barrel, winemakers can create more uniform interactions with the wine in the barrel. And it breaks down the yeast cell walls more quickly to create compounds into the wine. So lees are pretty important in getting that complex wine. You stir the wine how often? It just depends on what you want. Morrison says that she tends to stir the lees about once a month for each of 7 to 9 months in the barrel aging period. So you want to overstir or understir. Just like Goliath, she says, you want it just right. And they found that 7 to 9 times works perfectly. And many champagne producers value the lees for the roundness, the aromas, and flavors it imparts. Now, champagne completes its secondary fermentation in the bottle. And the lees don't rest in the bottom of the barrel. They are in each individual bottle. And because of that, they are slowly aged, so the lees collect in the neck and then removed at the end of the aging period. This is called riddling. I don't know if I've ever talked about riddling in the program before. I was going through this today and reading this and other articles, and it said riddling, and I always talked about riddling a lot at the winery. People would come up every once in a while and ask something about different things, which led me to remember riddling, and I don't know if I ever talked about it on the program, but riddling, okay. When you've seen champagne bottles probably in pictures or even in person that are all set on this big board at like a 45-degree angle, and they have the lees in it, and you don't want the lees to settle on one side of the bottle. And that can happen very easily. If you're storing a bottle for yourself, sometimes you will have a little residual lees that are still in there that you'll see stain the one side of the bottle because it wasn't turned or anything. Well, when you have champagne, you put these in these racks and you turn them a quarter of a turn every set period of time. I mean, usually it's every couple of weeks, every month, something like that. and you turn them so that the lees aren't all setting in one spot all the time. And this is towards the end of Method Champenoise, which is the traditional method of making champagne. And you rotate a quarter of a turn on these. Now, the people who are do this are excellent. Well, here it is. It says, this special table became known as a Pupitre, P-U-P-I-T-R-E. I pronounced it wrong, I guarantee you. Which started the system of remage, and remage is the turning of the bottles. A remuer, R-E-M-U-E-U-R, is the bottle turner for these champagne bottles. And a well-trained bottle turner can turn 20,000 to 75,000 bottles a day. A skilled bottle turner can do that. Hard work, obviously, but it's just that's the little punk in the bottom helps it. He just grabs the bottle and does a quarter of a twist with his wrist and goes up and down the racks and turns them just so the lees won't settle on one side of the bottle. This way, the lees also go down into the neck, and they slide into the neck, and then the removal of these particulates is called disgorgement. And this leads the appearance of the wine clear instead of cloudy, and then you have a nice, clear champagne without the lees, and the lees have already done their magic, and so everything is good. Let's see. But hand riddling, like I just said, it's called riddling. Hand riddling is a very labor-intensive step. It's, takes... time and people aren't training to do the job now, and so you're running short of people who used to do the riddling, and it can take up to 6 weeks to complete the manual riddling of a rack of wines, sparkling wines, and once you finish, you got to start over again and do it again. But in the 1970s, an invention called the gyro palette. G-Y-R-O-P-A-L-E-T-T-E. The gyro palette was invented to alleviate the labor costs and the hassle by automating the riddling process. And now the gyro palette can riddle 24 hours a day and complete a riddling cycle in about 7 days as opposed to a month by doing it by hand. 6 weeks, up to 6 weeks, they can do it in 7 days, and depends on how much sediment's in the bottle and all that too on the gyro cycle. The difference in quality, none. It's basically the same thing. You don't have any problems. Everything moves the yeast down the neck of the bottle. And the results are achieved through the general palates as well as it is by hand. So now most of the riddling is done with the general palate, unless they are small batches. And small batches, 100 to 500 bottles, it's usually turned over to a person to do now. And so that is riddling. That's what they do to get the lees to fall to the neck so they can disgorge it and take out the lees and reseal the champagne and sell it to you. So those are riddling and lees, and telling you all about the lees. Okay. Some terms to use to describe tannin. Now, tannin is that dryness you feel in your mouth, that stickiness. But let me give you a few words to describe tannins. So the next time you taste a red wine that's got tannins in it, Cabs, Merlots, Zinfandels, any of those, Malbecs, I can go on and name a whole bunch of different ones. But anytime you're at a loss, look for these terms to describe it, and you'll probably come up with something that will work for you. Grippy, G-R-I-P-P-Y. That means that once you taste that, it's immediately noticeable. Wham, you've got it right there. Integrated. This is perfectly in line with the other components, like the flavor and weight of the wine, the fill in the mouth and all that stuff. It's just the tannins are just really just where it should be. Silky. I find this a lot in some cabs. It's fine-grained and unobtrusive. It's there, but it's not overpowering. The less expensive the wine is, the more you're going to start getting a silky type reaction simply because it's not going to be overpowering. And once a wine's been aged for the proper number of years, it's going to be more silky. Same as the word plush, this meaning soft and integrated. So it's basically the same as silky, an aged wine that has the tannins settled in. It's going to be soft and integrated. Plush. Velvety. Soft, but with a little bite to it, a little catch to it. You know, you will probably notice this in wines that have not been aged to the maximum. I'd like to have a wine that has that little bite to it, a little velvety taste to it. Here's another one I haven't heard, but maybe a couple times in the years I've been drinking. Resolved. I've heard lots of different words to describe, but resolved has not been one of them. But this means smooth, no longer astringent, typical of mature wines. Once you've matured this wine into the tannins have all leveled out into the wine, it has been resolved. Again, I'm not familiar with that term. And then harsh, simply not integrated into the wine, just too much tannin. And too much tannin can make a wine taste harsh. It's just one you want to say, ooh, I need to get the tannins out of this. And you can do that by just setting this roll in the glass for a while. And that will help get those tannins out of that wine so that it's not as harsh. Okay, let's see. Something else. The sky, I told you about that. Walt's Vineyard. And they are having a concert. Walt's Vineyard, which is located in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, at 1599 Old Line Road, is having a concert tomorrow. Friday the 24th from 5:30 to 8:30. Doors open at 4:30. Excuse me. $15 per person. They've opened this club concert to the Waltz followers. You don't have to be a member of their clubs or anything else. This is open to everybody. Weather permitting, tomorrow, 5:30 to 8:30, Waltz sellers. Wines will be available for purchase. No other alcohol, obviously, permitted. You can bring picnic food, glasses, chairs, blankets, and enjoy the evening at Walsh Vineyard. Again, Walsh Vineyard is 1599 Old Line Road in Mannheim, Pennsylvania. If you're not subscribing to them, you can. Just walshvineyards.com. That is tomorrow. Let's see, where's... Nope, that has to be over in these here. Yeah, Tablas Creek. Tablas Creek is trying to get its certification. Let me see, where is... I had another vineyard here I was going to tell you about. Where is it? I don't know. Well, a couple other vineyards that are having activities over the next couple of weeks because of 4th of July, the ones I usually tell you about, Ennery, was it Ennery River? And everywhere is going to be having stuff coming up on 4th of July weekend. 4th of July is going to be a win. It'll be 1, 2, 3, 4 on a Monday this year. That'll be good. So, if you are so inclined, visit your local wineries for 4th of July coming up next week. Start making plans now. Some of them do have reservations required. Some of them do have restrictions. And so, because of that, be sure that you get hold of them first and be sure that you can't just pop in and then be turned away. So, if you have a favorite winery or if you're planning to be on the road, which, you know, they're saying quite a few people are, but with the gas prices, not me. But if you're out there and about and all that, visit wineries, I do highly suggest that you call them first to be sure that it is going to be okay, that they can accommodate you that might have restrictions or something. And I think that's going to be it for tonight. Oh, I'm early tonight. I usually go over. That should do it for this week.
Okay.
Back
to the story on... Okay.
Let me get... Whispering Oaks, tonight they have a concert. Tonight? June the 23rd at 6 o'clock. Oh, you missed it. Never mind. Okay. Back to the story.
And now you heard it first. Whispering Oaks. the Lees you were talking about, how do
Lees.
Spell that? Because I tried doing Google search and I couldn't figure Riddling and all that you were talking about.
L-E-E-S. Just L-E-E-S. That's it. Yeah.
That's not what I thought it was. I thought it was like the person's name, Ellie. I tried all kinds of stuff. L-E-I-G-H-S. L-E-A-Z. Everything but that. Okay. Yeah, I was looking it up. I was like, couldn't find it. All right. Well,
yeah, that's the sediment of wine in the barrel. But you also, if you just look up Lees, you get all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
I got Lees Grocery, Lees Environmental Service, Lees House. But what is Lees and wine? And the quick answer is our leftover yeast particles from autolysis, which is the self-destruction of yeast cells by enzymes created from fermentation. As strange as this may seem, Lees are used in white and sparkling wines to add beneficial textures and flavors. And that's just doing a Google search and just a question there. So L-E-E-S, Lees.
That was it. All right. Yeah, the other one, the other match I found was Leaves, L-E-A-V-E-S. And I'm thinking, wow.
Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong, really wrong.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be pronounced that way. So
Bees.
Kind of like bees, but something else.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. Now I can have fun researching stuff.
Researching that.
All right.
Yeah.
It's about 5 seconds away from 8 o'clock, just about there. And we'll talk to y'all next Thursday, which will be the 30th. Remember, we do have a guest, Stephen Lane. Will be the guest author, and we'll talk to him on the 30th. That's next Thursday, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, and the other one, YouTube. And thank you all for tuning in. Have a great week and a great weekend. And we'll
get
see
it
you
tomorrow
next
morning.
Time. Thank you.
Look at the alignment of the planets too. That's going to really be good tomorrow morning, about 5:30, right before the sun comes up. Yeah.
Ooh.
So check
it's
that
early,
out.
But it'll be.
It's
it'll
early,
be
but
it,
it's so. It, next time that'll happen. I think is going to be like in 30 years, 35 years, something like that. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's going to be a ways away.
What a day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Be safe. And I'll see you next week.
Cool. Yeah.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
I think it's still on iTunes. I don't know. I haven't checked in a while. Oh, we're still
on. Yes. I never. Okay. I missed that. There's other places we appear on that every once in a while I'm looking through stuff, and I'll go, All About Wine? I didn't know we were here.
Yeah.
And they pick us up for some reason. I'm not complaining, but I just, it's weird. That's what I say. People say, how many listeners do you have? And I say, I don't know. Well, how can you not know? And I said, because it's so many venues pick us up. I have no idea how many people out there actually listening because I don't get numbers from those. So,
yep,
so it's
definitely
weird.
Definitely watch back. Yep. Go to the green room real quick and then we'll be out of here.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought we were still...